HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Dr. Ryan Sherman. Ryan is the Chief Science Officer for Hogan Assessment Systems. Ryan, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Declan. Thanks so much for having me.
No, delighted to have you on. We're going to chat about building teams, especially in that hybrid model. We're going to talk about, you know, some of the things to look out for in a hybrid working environment. And then obviously Hogan Assessments, the clues in the name. We'll just talk about gauging or assessing people in terms of their openness and their ability to work within that type of environment. First things first, how can organizations successfully build teams in that hybrid model? And when they build them, how can they sort of embrace collaboration or promote collaboration?
Yeah, so there's actually a tremendous amount of research, as you might imagine, on building high-performing and highly effective teams. And it turns out that actually it's been a very vexing problem for a long time, and some folks have come up with some solutions. We have a solution for building high-performing teams at Hogan as well. But the hybrid model has really changed things in some ways because, it's as you said, it's changed the way we collaborate. We do a lot of meetings now virtually. That really impacts the way work gets done. And so one of the big things that we've seen, well, there's really two big areas. One is really with onboarding. That's where one of the places we see one of the most challenging sticking points for hybrid teams is how to get that onboarding. And in many organizations and in many teams, the way a new employee or the way a new team member learned was by sitting next to the master, by sitting next to that person and watching them work every day and seeing the kinds of problems that they encounter and the way they handle those problems. And that was sort of the way training often got done. Well, in a hybrid model, that doesn't really work. So there are other alternatives to this that we've seen some teams use with some degree of success. Some are like sort of having an open voice channel at all times, right? So we're all sitting on a voice channel actively or maybe using other kinds of software like Slack where people are sort of on there actively at all times during the day. That seems to sort of mimic that in-person process. But then the other part is just coordination of activities together, right? So when we were working in the workplace, there was that sort of natural communication of things that could happen as we encountered each other. We could deal with problems very quickly versus setting up meetings for those kinds of things. So that sort of natural coordination that happens when people are together, we've lost a little bit of that as well.
It's a really interesting point around onboarding. I had some comment to me recently that their people that they had onboarded in hybrid were now onboarding new people as well, you know, two steps away who had never been in the office when COVID was in full swing. So it is interesting, the techniques and the implications of that. How does it affect culture, Ryan, in your own opinion?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the biggest things, one of the biggest things that managers, leaders are worried about is how does this affect culture? How does this change the culture? How do you transmit the culture from a leadership to the rest of an organization, because we know that that's the way things work, right? Then when we talk about organizational effectiveness, one of the things that we know is that culture is really, really important. I mean, the old line is that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And we know that culture comes from the leaders. It comes from the values of those leaders. So how do those leaders transmit the culture to people if they're not there, right? So if it's a culture that is very independent, that's typically shown by being in the office together and watching people work independently. If it's a culture that's very collaborative, again, that's the same kind of thing where we're all working together in the office. If it's a culture that's sort of very relaxed and very casual, again, that's shown up in the way that people dress, the way people act and interact in the office, versus very formal kind of culture. And so it's really hard to transmit that in this way. And I think that that's the biggest thing that leaders are worried about. And I think it's a real concern because without that in-person interaction, it can be really difficult to transmit that culture. And it's not really clear. We don't really have great answers for how to transmit culture in virtual or even to some degree hybrid environments.
Yeah, I'm out for, you know, as you do onboard new joiners into that environment, what's best practice in your own opinion?
Yeah, so I think the thing to do is to take it really advantage of those in-person occasions, right? So particularly if we're working in a hybrid environment, that's really the opportunity to transmit that culture. We sort of had the luxury of transmitting culture on an everyday basis when everybody was in the office together. But as people work remotely, we really have to take more advantage of the cultural transmission opportunity when we are in person together. And instead, I feel like most places use that in-person time to catch up on other kinds of things, which is very natural. So you want to catch up on how people's families are doing and what's going on in people's lives. And again, it's a very natural thing to do, but leaders really have to take those moments very seriously, those in-person moments, say, this is really my opportunity to transmit the culture to the rest of the organization and to tell them what the organization is about. And to some extent, I think that's what effective organizations do in a hybrid model is they're very explicit about the culture in those in-person encounters, and they live that culture in those in-person encounters. And it has to be done very intentionally. And I think the organizations that are effective, that's what they're doing.
What about, I know it's not like, it's maybe not as common as was initially thought, but what about companies who are completely work from anywhere, work from home? Is there anything you would suggest to them in terms of culture, or is that just too early to say what that's going to look like? And is it like an evolving sort of situation?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting because there's actually many organizations. It's easy to think that no organizations existed like this before COVID, but in fact, many organizations existed that were entirely remote, entirely virtual before COVID even. And so for those organizations, I mean, that they have obviously had a way of transmitting their culture as well. And I think that the biggest issue that we're facing is leaders of organizations that have been meeting in person, fearing that whatever culture they had will be changed or reversed or moved in some direction that they don't like as it goes remote. But you will always establish some culture, whether it's in person or remote. And I think the concern is how do we keep the culture that we had when we were in person? But I think it's also worth evaluating what was that culture and is that really the one we want to have continuing going forward? Again, many organizations have been remote to begin with. From their inception, from the beginning of the organization, and they've created a culture that, in many cases, works really well. So for me, I think it's really worth considering what is the culture that you want to create going forward, and what are the best practices to continue to create that.
A slight aside, but what are your thoughts on that, and what are your thoughts on a sort of leader-driven culture, as in defining what the culture should be and then trying to apply it?
Yeah, well, we think that's the way most of these things work is that they do work from a leader, that they work from the leader down, right? So for me, I think of little things, and I think all of these little things count. But when I think about examples of the leader defining the culture, does the leader send emails at 2 a.m.? Does the leader send emails over the weekend? Does the leader send text messages, make Teams messages, phone calls, those kinds of things? Are they working at unusual hours, or are they working normal hours and expecting people to take hours off, right? Those kinds of things, I think, really count. And I think a lot of leaders don't think about that. I think a lot of leaders are actually thinking about their own career and their own reputation when they act and they behave. And so what they're doing is they're trying to send the image of who they want you to think about them, right? So if I'm a leader and I want you to think of me as a super hard worker, very dedicated, motivated at the company, I'll send emails at 2 a.m. and I'll work, hours that are unusual to make it look like I'm a very high performing, highly productive. And maybe I am. And maybe that's not just a fake reputation. Maybe that's really truly who I am. But it also sends a second message that this is the kind of company, this is what we expect of you. And I think if that's the kind of culture you want to create, then that's fine. But I think many people would say that's not the kind of culture they want to work in. Agreed. And so that's just one sort of example of how leaders, through their actions, shape the culture of the organization. And I think leaders don't really think very much about that. I think they're mostly thinking about, how their actions affect their reputation, not about how their actions affect the culture of the organization.
Yeah, action speaking louder than words. It's interesting in, and I appreciate we're talking from, you guys are in Tulsa and I'm in Dublin, Ireland, but in Ireland, there's legislation that gives, parents a good deal of paid parental leave while their children are under 2 years old. And it's just an observation that I've seen some reporting done on where more senior leaders are not taking this, but are yet preaching to their employees, you know, like, hey, look at all this great stuff we're doing for you, you should take it off, etc. So I can certainly understand where you're coming from in terms of them, you know, casting a positive leadership shadow, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. And it really sets, when you do things like that, you sort of set the tone that the expectation is that, you know, you might say one thing, but if your actions are reversed to that, it really sends the message to everybody else that, oh, even though they're saying this is a trick, this is a trap. They're telling me to take parental leave, but they're not taking it, which suggests to me that they sort of, there's a hidden expectation that I'm supposed to not take it.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
The hybrid environment, obviously, look, we're a couple of years into it as a norm for lots of companies, or, you know, a certain element at least of work from home for most sort of office based work at least. You guys are specialists in assessing, amongst other things, new employees. What's changed in terms of assessing the relative sort of aptness of a given individual as they join your organization, if they are now going to be, I don't know, 3 days work from home, two in the office? What specific things have changed in terms of how they're assessed, or how should you gauge whether they're suitable in that less supervised environment, I guess?
Yeah, so a couple of things have changed there. So the first is the thing that all the leaders and the managers are worried about is accountability, or they're worried about productivity, right? So are these people going to be productive when they're not here? So from an assessment standpoint, we have a really clear way of measuring that. And it turns out that a lot of this was, I think, overblown, this sort of concern about, you know, people being lazy and not working from home. I don't know how many folks have been in an office, but there's a heck of a lot of people in offices that are lazy and not working very hard.
Yeah.
Just because they're there doesn't mean they're being productive. And so one of the things that we know from an assessment standpoint is that the personality characteristics of highly effective, highly productive employees in the office are very similar to those of highly effective, highly productive employees who might work remotely. So from a personality standpoint, you're really looking for the same set of dimensions. However, we talked earlier a little bit about onboarding, and that's one of the trickiest issues is onboarding new employees. One of the things that we can say from a personality standpoint there is that you're looking for employees who can pick up new skills and knowledge quickly. So again, when we're in sort of this old onboarding format where you sort of are always sitting by somebody and sort of learning through osmosis almost, but just by sitting near them, in a remote or hybrid format where you're not near them all the time, you really need people who can learn on their own, who are sort of self-starting learners, who can go read technical documentation, go read policies and understand them and put them into practice right away and sort of understand the bigger picture and how those all fit together within the organization. It really is much more challenging when you have an employee who needs a lot of hand-holding through training when you can't physically be there to hold their hand, right? You're at a distance, and it becomes much more difficult to onboard those kinds of employees. So employees who, in our assessment terms, we refer to this as learning approach, who are really good self-learners tend to be more effective in these environments.
And did you guys have to, was that sort of a trait that you were already assessing for, or did you like develop new sort of products in response to the change in working environments?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, learning approach is one of the dimensions that we've been measuring for close to 40 years at Hogan.
Okay.
It's an interesting one because it really does, it impacts a very narrow area of our lives, which is just about how quickly we like to pick up new information, how interested we are in learning new information, going out and seeking that new information on our own versus sort of waiting for other people to tell us what they need us, what they want us to do. And so it is something we've been measuring for a long time, but it's historically had pretty circumscribed uses. But now with hybrid environments, it's proving to be more important than it has in the past.
Yeah, more mainstream, so to speak. In terms of the general assessment landscape, what do you see? What's the stuff that you guys are interested in at the moment in terms of where this is all going? What's piqued your interest?
Yeah, so I think that the big things, some of the two biggest topics these days in the assessment industry are this one, remote work and how to do that effectively. But the other one, of course, that's really big right now is artificial intelligence and how artificial Sure. intelligence is affecting our workplaces, how it's affecting assessments in our business, how it's affecting people taking assessments, how it's affecting people's interpretations of assessments, those kinds of things as well.
Yeah, it's obviously affecting all of our working lives. Is there, when you are assessing someone, is there an appetite for a lot of companies? I mean, we talked about their sorry, I forgot the term, Ryan, you used learning
abroad.
Agility, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, are most companies now assessing for more than the job that's right in front of them?
Yeah, so that's another big part, right, is it's very tricky to talk about from a legal standpoint. It really does depend on the country or the local rules about what you're allowed to hire for. But, of course, companies are always looking for that. They're always looking for the people who have potential to move to other jobs. When they hire somebody on, they say, well, this person can fit with this role, but I also anticipate they might have some ability to fit in another role later on. And that becomes part of the interview process.
Yeah.
That becomes part of the assessment process as well when we're talking about personality assessments. Like I said, I think in many cases, legally, you're only allowed to hire for the job that's posted that they're applying for. But it would be silly.
That might be a little discrepancy to Ireland now. I don't think that would be a problem in Ireland. That's funny. Okay. Sorry, go on. I cut you off.
No, it's all good. Yeah, I actually didn't know. I don't actually know how. Yeah, in different states, it in the U.S. even, there's different rules about that.
So. Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think you'd be naive anyway, despite what the laws may say, to think that a company would not be considering what's this person's future potential. I mean, the leadership ability is really scarce. We know it's a really scarce commodity. And so I think organizations are almost always going to be looking for that when they're hiring someone. Does this person have leadership potential? Could this person be a manager here someday? Could this person go on to other leadership roles inside the company? I think you're a smart company if you're making those kinds of decisions, if you're thinking about employees that way.
And just last thing from me, Ryan, I'm a bit of a data nerd. When you guys work with companies for a long time, what sort of, like, I know nothing's perfect. So, you know, sometimes someone can game the system or, you know, something mightn't be picked up. But what degree of accuracy would you guys be talking to clients about in terms of predicting someone's, say, ability to have that strong learning agility or, you know, even personality fit within an organization? Is there a high degree of accuracy?
Yeah, I love that question, Declan, because most people aren't really sophisticated enough. Most people don't think about the problems this way. And the reality is that if you're in the hiring business, I mean, if you're hiring employees, if you're in any business, you're hiring, you're making decisions, you're making judgments about people. And there's no perfect way to make those judgments. The way we like to think about it is it's like drilling for oil, right? You know, sometimes you get some right, sometimes you get some wrong, and you hope to get more right than you get wrong. And if you do, you can be very, very profitable. And that's how it is with hiring. And so the way we think of hiring and the way we think about assessments, it's about improving that probability. It's about improving your odds of making a good decision. And how much is that improvement? Well, we find that with a high quality assessment like the ones that we use at Hogan, we can move your probability of hiring an above average employee versus a below average employee. Let's just use a really simple example.
Yeah.
Something like 50-50 if you're tossing a coin. If you're doing an interview, it might be more like 55-45 or 60-40. With our assessments, we find that we can move you into about the 75-25 range. So yeah, about three out of four, you can make an effective or good decision. And you're still not going to be perfect. And I think that's the thing that people run into. They think that, these assessments don't work because they're not perfect. But there is no perfect predictor of how someone's going to perform on the job. What we can try to do is move the odds more in your favor.
And do you guys, when you guys are looking at the cumulative data, so when, you know, obviously you're seeing data from lots of different companies, how are you incorporating the, you know, are you using machine learning and that sort of approaches, or what are you doing with the data to improve?
Yeah, so we do use machine learning for some of our algorithms, although we have to be a little, there are some algorithms that I think would be even better in terms of the accuracy, but then you run into issues about interpretation, interpretability, understanding why the people got the scores they got, being able to explain to a lawyer why people got the scores they got, so legal issues come up. So we try to use relatively simple algorithms when we can, even though there may be some machine learning going on in the background that's helping us develop those algorithms. At the end of the day, we try to use algorithms that balance both accuracy and interpretability so that we can get the best possible recommendations, but at the same time give recommendations that are easy to interpret and things that are legally justifiable.
No, I find it a fascinating area, I have to say. Ryan, thanks so much for your time today. So Dr. Ryan Sherman is Chief Science Officer for Hogan Assessment Systems. Ryan, if someone wants to get in contact with you guys, what's the best way to engage?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. My first name is pretty unique, R-Y-N-E, and Sherman. So it's pretty easy to find me on LinkedIn. You can also go to our webpage, HoganAssessments.com, or you can check out our podcast, The Science of Personality Podcast, to hear more.
Brilliant. And we'll link all of that under the show notes. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast. Brought to you by Irish Life Health.